The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
A woman driving through a rural area that she was unfamiliar with. She was alone. She didn't know where she was. She had never been to this part of town. She was sure of her destination. Her destination had just been changed for her. Her destination was death. She could feel her kidnapper's knife dig deeper into her arm as she desperately tried to grip the steering wheel. He was an unwelcome passenger who had just forced his way into her car. Every time she looked at him, she'd look at him in the eye, and she could tell that he was hell-bent on causing her pain. She was terrified. But at the same time, there was no place she'd rather be at this moment than driving her own vehicle, because she knew her salvation was there, hidden under the seat. She reached her destination. It was a wooded area. Kidnapper told her to stop the car. She did. She stepped on the brakes quickly. In one fell swoop, she turned off the ignition and reached for the gun underneath her seat. She thrust the barrel of the gun into his face. That's when the look in his eyes changed. He realized that he had brought a knife to a gunfight. He immediately fled into the forest. The woman thanked God that she had a gun and a concealed carry permit before driving herself to the hospital. 61-year-old Floyd R. May was arrested shortly after and charged with aggravated kidnapping and assault. If the woman hadn't have taken the time to purchase and understand her firearm, she would likely be dead. But because she was going to be the first responder, she knew that there were times when you couldn't wait for the police. She had become a responsible gun owner and saved her own life. This is the story that should be told every day. This is the story when we are talking about women who are being assaulted and they have no choice but to be assaulted. This is the story of the Second Amendment, that you have the right to protect yourself. There are bad people out there who will think nothing of taking your life. By the way, this story comes to us from Fox 5 in San Diego. How many people in California will watch that story that unfolded and believe that everyone there in California has a right to have the chance to defend themselves?
Tuesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
This hour, we are going to share with you some stories of real bravery and cowardice. Dana Lash is going to be joining us in about 25 minutes. She's actually had to move out of her house and move her family to an undisclosed location because she is an outspoken proponent of the Second Amendment, and she is receiving death threats. And her family has been targeted. We'll talk to her in about 25 minutes. So I can't decide whether this is cowardice or courage. But up on Facebook yesterday, the guy who wrote Con Air and Gone in 60 Seconds, a new movie is coming out, Beautiful Girls, his name is Scott Rosenberg, and on his Facebook page, and I'm going to delete some of the language, but he wrote one of the most powerful posts I think I've ever read. He said, so, yeah, we need to talk about Harvey. I was there for a big part of it. From what, 1994 to the early 2000s? Something like that. Certainly the Golden Age. The Pulp Fiction, Shakespeare in Love, Clerks, Swingers, Scream, Good Will Hunting, English Patient, Life is Beautiful. You know, those years. Harvey and Bob made my first two movies, and they signed me to an overall deal. Then they bought that horror script of mine about the 10 plagues for a lot of money. They also bought that werewolf biker script, the one that nobody else liked but was my personal favorite. And they were going to publish my novel. They anointed me. They made it so other studios thought I was the real deal. They gave me my career. I was barely 30. I was sure I had struck gold. They loved me, these two brothers, who reinvented the cinema and who were fun and tough and didn't give an East Coast F about all the slick ones out in L.A. The glory days in Tribeca, the old cramped offices, the wonderful gang of executives and assistants, and the filmmakers who were doing repeat business. The brothers wanted to create a family of film, and they did just that. We looked forward to having our meetings there, meetings that would turn into plans, that would turn into raucous nights out on the town. Simply put, OG Miramax was a blast. So yeah, I was there. And let me tell you one thing, and let's be perfectly clear about one thing. Everyone effing knew. Not that he was raping. No, that we never heard. But we were certainly aware of a certain pattern of overly aggressive behavior that was rather dreadful. We knew about the man's hunger, his fervor, his appetite. There was nothing secret about his voracious rapacity. Like a gluttonous ogre out of the Brothers Grimm. All couched in vague promises of potential movie roles. And it should be noted that there were many who actually succumbed to his bulky charms willingly, which surely must have only impelled him to cast his fetid net even wider. But like I said, everyone effing knew. And to me, if Harvey's behavior was the most reprehensible thing that one could imagine, a not-so-distant second is the current flood of sanctimonious denial and condemnation that now crashes upon those shores in gloppy tides of BS righteousness, because everyone effing knew. And do you know how I know this is true? Because I was there. I saw you. I talked with you about it. You, the big producers, you, the big directors, you, the big agents, you, the big financiers, you, the big rival studio chiefs, you, the big actors, the big actresses, you, the big models, you, the big journalists, you, the big screenwriters, you, the big rock stars, the big restaurateurs, and you, the big politicians. I saw you, all of you. God help me, I was there with you. Again, maybe we didn't know to what degree the magnitude of the awfulness, not the rapes, not the shoving against the wall, not the potted plant, but we knew something. We knew something was bubbling under, something odious, something rotten. But, and this is as pathetic as it is true, what would you have us do? Who are we to tell? The authorities? What authorities? The press? Harvey owned the press. The internet? There was no internet or reasonable facsimile thereof. So we should have called the police and said what? Should we have reached out to some fantasy attorney general of movie land? Because that doesn't exist. Not to mention, most of the victims chose not to speak out, aside from sharing the grimy details with a close girlfriend or confidant. And if they discussed it with their representatives, agents, managers, who themselves feared the wrath of the big man, the agents and managers would tell them to keep it to themselves, because who knew the repercussions? That old saw, you'll never work in this town again, came crawling back to putrid life like a reanimated cadaver in the late night zombie flick. But yes, everyone knew someone who had been on the receiving end of lewd advances of him. Or knew someone who knew someone. A few actress friends of mine told me stories of a ghastly hotel meeting, repugnant bathrobe shucking, of a loathsome massage request. And though, although they were rattled, they sort of laughed at his arrogance. How he actually believed that he could, the simple sight of his naked body, the doughy, carbuncled flesh, was going to get them in the mood. So I just believed it to be a grotesque display of power, a dude misreading the room and making a lame, if vile pass. It was all much easier to believe that. It was much easier for all of us to believe that. Because here's where the slither meets the slime. Harvey was showing us the best of times. He was making our movies, he was throwing the biggest parties, taking us to the Golden Globes, introducing us to the most amazing people, meeting with Vice President Gore, clubbing with Quentin and Uma, drinks with Salman Rushdie and Ray Fiennes, dinners with Mick Jagger and Warren freaking Beatty. The most epic Oscar weekends, they seemed to last for weeks. Sundance, Cannes, Toronto, Telluride, Berlin, Venice, private jets, stretch limousines, Springsteen shows. Hell, Harvey took me to St. Bart's for Christmas for 12 days. I was a broke-ass kid from Boston who had never even heard of St. Bart's before he booked my travel. Once he got me tickets to 7 of the hottest Broadway shows in 1 week so I could take a new girlfriend on a dazzling tour of the theater. He got me seats on the 40-yard line of the Super Bowl when the Patriots were playing the Packers in New Orleans. He even got me a hotel room, which was impossible to get that weekend. He gave, and he gave, and he gave, and he gave. He had a monarch's volcanic generosity when it came to those within his circle, and a mafia don's fervent need for abject loyalty. But never mind us. What was he doing for the culture? Making stunningly splendid films at a time when everyone else was cranking out simpering Independence Day ripoffs. It was glorious, all of it. So what if he was coming on a little strong to some of the young models who had moved mountains to get into one of his parties? So what if he was exposing himself in a 5-star hotel room like a cartoon flasher out of Mad Magazine? Who are we to call foul? Golden geese don't come along too often in one's life. Which goes back to my original point. Stop it. Everyone effing knew. But everybody was just having too good of a time and doing remarkable work, making remarkable movies. As the old joke goes, we needed the eggs. Okay, maybe we didn't need them, but we really, 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 really liked them eggs. And so we were willing to overlook what the golden goose was up to in the murky shadows behind the barn. And for that, I'm eternally sorry. To all of the women that had to suffer this, I'm eternally sorry. I worked with Mira and Rosanna and Lysette. I know Rose and Ashley and Claire. I've known them for years. Their courage only hangs a lantern on my shame. And I'm eternally sorry for those who suffered in silence all this time and have chosen to remain silent today. I mostly lost touch with the brothers by the early 2000s for no specific reason. Just there were other jobs, other studios. But a few months ago, Harvey called me out of the blue to talk about the bygone days, to talk about how great it would be if we could get some of the gang back together to make a movie. I think he must have known then that the noose was tightening. There was a wistfulness to him that I'd never heard before, a melancholy. It most assuredly had a walking to the gallows feel. When I hung up, I wondered, what the heck was that all about? In a few short weeks, I would know. It was the condemned man simply wanting to comb some of the ruins of his old stomping grounds one last time. So, yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry and ashamed. Because, in the end, I was complicit. I didn't say crap. I didn't do crap. Harvey was nothing but wonderful to me, so I reaped the rewards and I kept my mouth shut. And for that, once again, I'm sorry. But you should be sorry, too, with all these victims speaking up to tell their tales. Shouldn't those who witnessed it from the sidelines do the same? Instead of retreating to the cowardly canopied confines of faux outrage? Doesn't being a bystander bring with it the responsibility of telling the truth, however personally disgraceful it might be? You know who you are. You know what you knew. And do you know how I knew what you knew? Because I was there with you. I saw you. And because everyone effing knew. Tanya and I needed new blinds badly. We were tired of looking at our windows through this. We needed to redo our bedroom. It was these hideous drapes that came with the house, and we just didn't take them down. And it was like, oh my gosh. And they were ugly. And so we emailed blinds.com. I went on blinds.com and we started looking, and I'm like, I don't know. And so we emailed them, and I thought, you know, okay, let's schedule a time maybe next week. And they instantly emailed back. You ready to do it now? You want to do it now? We did a FaceTime session that Saturday morning. They took pictures of the house, superimposed pictures of the drapes that we wanted, and they completely transformed the room. They gave us some of the best customer service we have ever experienced. I'm not kidding. I'm a fan of the customer service of Apple. It's why I have Apple. Because of their customer service, and the same with blinds.com. They are remarkable, and they'll remake your blinds for free if you mismeasure or you pick the wrong color. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks just as good in person as it does online. Every order gets free shipping. Their prices are outrageous, and right now they're even better. Right now through October 24th, you'll get huge site-wide savings at blinds.com when you use the promo code BECK. You'll get an additional 5% off with the promo code BECK. Huge site-wide savings, blinds.com, with an additional 5% off with the promo code BECK, but it only lasts until October 24th. So do it now. Do it tonight. Blinds.com, promo code BECK. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It's strange because I have a lot of respect for what he wrote, because he said, not only am I ashamed that I just took the money and shut my mouth, he said, I'm sickened now by this next violation, and that is of the people who knew and say they don't.
This is the screenwriter who was talking about his experience with the Weinstein company.
Who wrote, that was one of the most powerful things I've ever read.
And he's a screenwriter.
It was beautifully written.
It was really well done.
Beautifully written.
It's interesting because we've heard this from a lot of people inside Hollywood about Weinstein, in that a lot of people knew he was cheating on his wife. A lot of people knew he was a real dirtbag. In many ways, in business, he screamed at people. He abused them verbally. And everyone kind of knew about that stuff. And people, you know, kind of knew that he would put young 22-year-old models in a position in which they'd kind of have to have a choice between their career and a very unpleasant experience with a large fat guy in a robe. But again, that's different than obviously the really high-end stuff. Yeah. We're talking about rape in some of these cases. Yeah. I wonder, however, if some of him being a jerk in so many other ways shielded him.
Because so I talked to a friend of mine in Hollywood yesterday, and I said, come on, dude, come on, you knew. And he said, honestly, we didn't. And I said, come on. He said, Glenn, I'm telling you the truth. We thought he was the biggest slimy dirtbag. He said, we knew he was a serial cheater on his wife. We knew that he would proposition everybody and anything. He said, we even knew that he would be with hookers and things like that. He said, we all knew he was a guy you did not want to be around. He said, but there's a difference between consensual and not consensual. He said, we knew that he was a dirtbag. He said, but everything that we would ever hear either came out in a settlement and we would go, okay, well, the court system is working this out, they're working this out, or we would hear it third hand. He said, so what are we supposed to do?
Right.
You know, tweet, hey, I've heard third hand that this is happening.
That this multimillionaire is a rapist.
Right.
Like, you know, like you can't do that. That's And right. By the way, you shouldn't do that, right? I mean, you don't just tweet accusations against some guy you heard third hand. I think the other part of that, too, is that because he was such a bad guy and had so many enemies, it was probably more believable that the worst of it wasn't true.
Sure.
That he had these enemies that would accuse him of things that were false. And that probably added to it as well.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So Dana Loesch, who is just one of the most remarkable conservatives that I know, a strong and fierce woman who is does everything she does because she's a mom. And, you know, after the World Trade Center came down and things started getting crazy, she was a mom. And she decided to start speaking out. And next thing you know, she's on the radio and now she's syndicated. She's got her own TV show here at The Blaze. And she's also a spokesperson for the NRA, which has caused her real problems in the last year. So much so that Dana tweeted over the weekend that she was moving and had to move to a new house, undisclosed location, because people on the left had found out where she was living and began to threaten her and her family. Welcome to the program, Dana.
Hey, Glenn. Good to be with you.
First of all, you safe?
Yeah, I am. I'm good. I mean, I'm safe wherever I am.
I wouldn't mess with you ever. I just would not mess with you.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy that it's to this point. It's crazy that, you know, in the past year, just by being vocal on a particular issue, and understandably so, that it has gotten to this point. And I tweeted, you mentioned the tweet where I just posted, I took it because I just thought this was so crazy. And I, you know, I love where I live, and I'm staying in Texas and I love where I live, but, and nobody wants to move right as the holiday season is gearing up. I had thought to do this a little bit more planned out, but you know, when you have people that send you emails that say things like, well, I'm going to make it to where you feel like the parents of Newtown, and where you get all this crazy stuff, and they can't just keep it to you, and they can't just keep it to ideas. They have to start bringing in innocents and very young soft targets in. That's when, you know, I'm fine to stay where I am. But when you're, you know, your kids are too afraid to ride their bikes outside in front of the house, up and down the street, which is one of the reasons why I loved where we moved, because when I left downtown St. Louis, my kids couldn't do that. And that was obviously a clear sign, time to leave and come here to, you know, what I think is the safest and one of the best places in the country. And I had people driving by my house, taking pictures of my home, Glenn, not just like Google Maps stuff. I mean, like actual photos of my home, and putting it online, putting my address online, putting my private cell phone number, which I know anybody can find anything about anybody, but they put that online. They started calling my cell phone number. At one time, they called it when the cops were at my house a little after midnight one evening. But it was when they really started, I guess, because they couldn't get me by going after me. So they decided to target my kids, which is always the most dangerous place in the world for anybody to be, is between a mother and her kids, and especially so for me. I guess that they thought they were going to send a message. So I'm just going to get louder, but I'm going to do it from an undisclosed location.
Dana, what was the conversation with your kids like?
We have had it before. The first big conversation that we had was after my oldest son, who's on the internet in a limited way. Like he's not allowed on Twitter. He's not allowed on Facebook. He's not allowed on Snapchat. And I always go through everything because it's not a democracy. It's a momocracy in the house. And one of his friends, the day that I was actually doing my program at The Blaze, my TV program at The Blaze, and this was the day that video came out. where this guy had made this death fetish video where I killed myself. And before I even got home, after doing my show at the Blaze, my son's best friend had already sent him a link to the video saying, did you see this? This is your mom. And that's how my oldest son found out. So when I got home, we had to have this, you know, it's not like I sit down every night with my kids over the dinner table and we have Ronald Reagan school. You know, I mean, they're able to go and live their own lives and do their own thing. And I, you know, obviously we have a certain set of ideals that they must live by, but we don't pummel them with politics. And so we had to have that conversation over the dinner table that night. And that was really one of the first big conversations that we had. Then when we had local police here, when this one individual found my cell phone number and called it while the police were here, we had to have another conversation. And then after there were repeated emails about the boys, that's when we had yet another conversation, because we had to have law enforcement also go to their school and make sure that their school security was safe, which it was. And our school's amazing. I wish I could just go there myself and work with the school administrators and make sure that they had a good security plan. And they worked with us and they were just awesome. We had a private security firm as well. And so now they're aware, but we don't want to scare them. They're just aware. We want to make them situationally aware, but not freaked out or paranoid, because it's no way to live your life. But my youngest still is like, yeah, I don't want to have anything to do with going outside in front of the house. I don't want to ride my bike in front of the house. I don't want to do any of this stuff. And that's what I can't handle. So I thought, okay, well, we're going to need to go. If you don't feel safe in your own home, we got to leave.
Hmm. Dana, do you find it odd that here we are talking about, you know, people like Harvey Weinstein and how, you know, these powerful men are abusing women by the thousands and thousands, and people are tweeting about it and telling all their stories. And at the same time, these same people are asking for the Second Amendment to essentially go away so that women have no way to defend themselves.
Yes, Stu, I think that's a good point. And I had that observation just, I guess, right after the Weinstein thing broke, because he said he was going to go after gun owners and he was going to target the NRA. And I thought, well, of course, you're a serial predator. Of course you want women disarmed. That makes perfect sense, because rapists and pedophiles and predators agree. They love soft targets. They love them. And so, yeah, I do find that weird, because that's one of the big reasons that I advocate for what I advocate, because I want people to be safe. I want men and women particularly to be able to defend themselves, because as much as empowered as a woman thinks she is, and as tough as a woman thinks she is, and as many Lara Croft movies as she watches, you are still going to be statistically outweighed by a man. You're still going to be overpowered by a man's mere muscle mass and more powerful bone density. You're still going to be overpowered, which is why I carry, because then I can overpower my attacker.
Did you have a moment going through any of this, Dana, that you thought to yourself, you know what? Why am I doing this? Why am I bothering?
Oh, no. No.
Not even a second.
No. I haven't. And I don't know if that's weird or not, but I haven't. I believe so strongly what I believe in, and I believe that I'm on the right side and I'm fighting for truth. I'm not, if I were pushing propaganda, if I were saying something that I didn't feel in my soul was true, then yeah, I can see how I would not have a firm foundation on which to stand during difficult times. But I don't feel that way. I know that I'm on the right side. I'm talking about defending people's lives, and I can never, that's a pro-life issue, really. And I can never and will never feel bad about that, ever. Just so long as I'm on the right side, good.
Have you had anybody from the left reach out to you and all say this is inexcusable?
I've had one reporter at CNN who reached out privately, which I thought was nice. Publicly, there have been a few progressive men and progressive women. And I think perhaps the biggest name among those was Chelsea Clinton, to her credit, she did not. I wouldn't mince my words, but to her credit, she didn't predicate it upon anything. She just said, this is awful, period. And it should be, because I've had other people say, well, despite, you know, the politics, I still think that's irrelevant. Because here's the thing. We're all citizens first. And this is where the identity politics stuff has got to stop. You know, everybody, we are Democrat and Republican and conservative and progressive. Everything else comes after You know, I list it as you're a child of God, then you're, you know, you're an American citizen, and then you can be all your other stuff that you want to be. But you, people don't have their priorities right in terms of identity, and that's what's messing everything up. Everybody wants to focus on all of the places in which they're different. And I did appreciate that Chelsea Clinton tweeted that, because she got right to the point. She didn't predicate it upon anything. It was just simply, it was wrong. And that's what people need to do. Now, I know that everyone says, well, it exists on the right and the left, this stuff. And it does. It absolutely does.
And we stand against it when it happens exactly. On the right.
That's absolutely right. And you have done that, and I have done that. But here's the big difference, though. There is a difference. It is perceived and treated differently on the public stage.
Yes.
When you have a progressive woman and a conservative woman, if they receive the same foul treatment, it is virtuous for the progressive woman, and the conservative woman, it doesn't exist. And that's what I want to stop.
Dana Lash, best of luck. God bless you.
Thank you, Glenn.
And your family.
Thank
you bet. Bye bye.
Find Dana on Twitter at DLash, and as well as, of course, here on The Blaze, where she does a show every night. Also, she's, of course, one of the big spokespeople at the National Rifle Association. So join up there.
I have a ton to say on this issue. A ton to say. I was... just driving down my street yesterday, and I thought, we don't even really know our neighbors. We don't even know our neighbors. But there's a reason I don't know my neighbors. I live in a double gated community, and I bought that house for the double gates. The gates around the community and the gates around my house and the, you know, 9-foot wall around it. Because I remember my children being frightened. I remember my wife calling me, there is someone again taking pictures of our house. I remember people having access to our garbage and going through our garbage. I remember my son looking up saying, Dad, do people want to kill you? I remember my daughter saying, I don't want to go with Daddy. I'm afraid. I want to stay here. I remember the first time my older children walked into a room and I was getting dressed for an event and I was putting on a bulletproof vest. And I remember the look in their eyes. For what? Because we disagree with each other? This is the world has gone insane, and it's not just people like me or Dana. The world has gone insane. And we're not seeing each other anymore. And to think that I wouldn't have the right to protect myself, that I wouldn't have the right to own a gun. No. No, I don't think so. I'm lucky enough to be able to afford the crippling cost of security. And it is crippling. Dana doesn't have that. 24-hour security? She has to be secure. You know, towards the end of his life, this preacher went and he begged to be able to get a concealed carry permit. Begged. It was his right to have one. But the local sheriff said, no, for your own safety, we'll provide safety and you shouldn't have one. That's why Martin Luther King was not allowed to carry a gun, even though he had a right. His local sheriff stopped him. We have a right to protect ourselves, and we need to stand up for it. The Fed is at it again. The overall sentiment is leaning towards another rate hike. The fact is it may come in December, as investors now see roughly an 80% chance of a hike. So now is the time to make your move on that new home, that purchase, that mortgage refi. The rates are still low, and the people that can help you do it is American Financing, the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing, dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that align with your unique financial goals. American Financing, straightforward, effortless mortgage experience. American Financing is now doing reverse mortgages. The reverse mortgage is a good way to increase your monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining ownership of your home. So call their number, 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Bo Bergdahl, his story next.
Glenn Beck.
We talk about protecting yourself. We talk about protecting your belongings. Liberty Safe is the best safe on the market, period. There's no other qualifier to that. They're just the best. They not only make great safes, but now they're making it even easier for you to get one. At LibertySafe.com, you can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with $0 down and 0% APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. This is going to be the nicest thing in your house. It's the nicest thing in my house. I know that. For me, there's nothing like owning a Liberty Safe. It's peace of mind to be able to store the things that you actually care about, not getting stolen. And of course, in-home delivery service, they make it really easy to get this thing installed in your home. $20 a month on approved credit with 12 months interest-free payments. It's amazing. Go to LibertySafe.com right now. It's home of the best built safes on the planet. Go there right now and check it out. LibertySafe.com. LibertySafe.com.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Bo Bergdahl. His fate is now in the hands of a judge, and he's awaiting sentencing after entering a guilty plea of charges of endangering his fellow soldiers in Afghanistan. There's no back and forth between the lawyers, no you can't handle the truth type of courtroom drama, just a traitor facing the music. I left, quoting my fellow platoon mates, that's inexcusable, end quote. It's harsh, but there's no sugarcoating what Bo Bergdahl did. He didn't serve with honor and distinction as Susan Rice or President Obama wanted you to believe. He betrayed the trust of his brothers in arms, and they died because of it. If I can give him credit for anything, it's that he's owning his actions and accepting his own guilt. This is such a tragedy on so many levels, but
The focus today shouldn't be on a disgraced soldier or the political maneuvering of a past administration. They say the greatest love is to lay down one's life for another. Well, six soldiers did that, just trying to bring him home. Staff Sergeant Clayton Bowen, Private First Class Morris Walker, died from a roadside bomb while searching for Bo Bergdahl. Staff Sergeant Kurt Curtis of Murray, Utah, died from multiple gunshot wounds. Second Lieutenant Darren Andrews of Dallas, Texas, was killed when an IED and RPG exploded nearby. Staff Sergeant Michael Murphy of Snyder, Texas, told his family, after being taken skydiving on his 17th birthday, that he had found his calling. He wanted to be an Army paratrooper. He died from an IED. Private First Class Matthew Martinek was in a vehicle searching for Bo Bergdahl when his patrol came under fire. After initially surviving an IED and RPG and multiple gunshot wounds, he died a week later. After 8 years and being paraded in front of the cameras by the president as a hero, the truth is finally here, and Bo Bergdahl himself pleaded guilty, and he's receiving his punishment. Today, say a prayer for him. Say a prayer for his family. But please say a prayer for those who died trying to bring him home. Say a prayer for the families of those brave men who are trying to move on. But most of all, today, let's honor the fallen.
Tuesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Heritage Foundation had a talk that they had a pediatrician there. In fact, the president of the American College of Pediatricians, who has received a lot of heat because she said this about transgenderism.
As to the studies, there are two that I am aware of which claim that affirming your child's gender confusion is good for them. Number one, it assumes that coaching a child into a fixed false belief is mentally healthy. Science doesn't allow you to assume your conclusion. Number two, those studies are extremely small. Number three, those studies are very short term. And number four, the control group of mentally healthy children are the siblings. Most of them were siblings of the trans-identifying child. Oh, and there's a number five. The parents were the ones evaluating the mental health of the children. This is not science. I don't think you need to have an MD or a PhD to know that's not science. That's ideology masquerading as science. Chemical castration, which is what you are doing when you put any biologically normal child on puberty blockers.
She went on and had a lot to say, and she joins us now, Dr. Michelle Critella. Doctor, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So you had to have quite a weekend.
I've been at this fighting for the truth on behalf of all children, not only the gender-confused children who are being put on toxic medications, but also for all of our children in public and private schools who are now being taught that from preschool forward, they are being taught that you could be trapped in the wrong body. This is outrageous. It is outrageous. It is terrifying for these young children. It's a lie.
So tell me, Tell me what your thought is on those people who feel that they are trapped in the wrong body.
Well, it's a grave injustice to them. I mean, let's even back up. Look, when we're talking about mental health, we should all agree that, A, there is an objective physical reality that we live in. Okay, that's what science is all about. Science is about the physical reality we live in. And to be mentally healthy, at a bare minimum, your thinking and perceptions should be in line with that physical reality. And here, when it's transgenderism alone that psychology and medicine say you can have a fixed false belief. You can believe something that's contrary to genetics, physiology. You can believe something that's contrary to hard science and still be mentally well. I mean, that's insanity. If I go to my doctor and say, "Hi, I'm Margaret Thatcher," and you hold a gun to my head and I still insist that I am Margaret Thatcher, well, I'm crazy. I'm delusional. And my doctor will recognize that and put me on an antipsychotic. But if I go in and say, "I'm a man," and I insist it consistently, okay, yeah, congratulations, you're transgender. This is who you are. It's cooperating, and my colleague and friend, Dr. Paul McHugh, said it best. He said it's cooperating with mental illness. And in the case of children, I refer to it as coaching them into a mental illness. As far as I'm concerned, when children say, "I'm not my biological sex," or a little boy says, "I want to cut off my penis," a young woman says, "I'm binding my breasts, I want a mastectomy," that's a cry for help, not a cry for hormones. They're confused. This is a symptom. They are emotionally troubled, and it's a cry for help, not a cry for hormones.
Michelle, I'm of the mindset that, you know, geez, what you want to do with your body, I don't. I mean, people, you know, do horrible things to their body. And I think that it's a cry for help, you know, just when I see people who have put, you know, rings through their face over and over and over again. And it's their choice. There's a difference, however, when it comes to children. And what we are now advocating, what our doctors are now advocating, is sterilization, and to actually take really detrimental hormones and change you forever. And you made a great point over the weekend. The American Society of Pediatrics says, you know, doctors should discourage kids from having a tattoo because it's permanent and it's scarring. And yet they'll give a child without parental permission a double mastectomy.
Right. And so you raise several excellent points. Number one, yes, adults have a maturity, both experiential maturity and cognitive maturity, that children and teenagers do not have. And this isn't just known through common sense, and I mean, any mother, school teacher, father, grandparent knows this. Shakespeare knew it. Okay. Children are not little adults, and teenagers and adolescents do crazy things. Neuroscience has now proven it. We know this through functional brain imaging, that the risk center and the control, the frontal lobes are the portions of the brain that control judgment, risk assessment, and self-control. Those don't mature until the early 20s. So, as you said, if we're talking about an adult who is convinced that they are thoroughly unhappy. They believe they're the opposite sex. I still consider that a tragedy. But if they go forth and they're going to pay out of their own pocket for these surgeries and these hormones because they and the physicians they've consulted think this is all that's left for them, as a society, okay, I can see that. And but what the College of Pediatricians and I are arguing is specifically what you said. These are children. These are children who need protection and guidance and authentic mental health. And what's even more important, we know already that the vast majority of young children, up to 95%, who are supported through natural puberty, up to 95%, certainly well over 75%, will accept their biological sex by young adulthood. So, you know, as you said, to put them on puberty blockers plus the cross-sex hormones together, if you've never allowed them to mature enough through puberty, you are permanently sterilizing them. A child at age 11, even a child who's a teenager, cannot possibly comprehend what it means to be permanently sterile. And the same thing with getting a double mastectomy. And the same thing, when you go on these cross-sex hormones, your risk, it elevates risks for heart disease, hypertension or high blood pressure, strokes, cancers. This is crazy. It is absolutely crazy to put children at risk on these high-risk medications when the vast majority would simply outgrow it with support through natural puberty.
I want to come back. We have to take a break, but I want to come back and talk to you because there's a real crisis of suicide and I believe it's a loss of meaning in our culture. And what is being pushed in the schools, I think, is extraordinarily dangerous. And I want to further that conversation with you when we continue.
Back with more with Dr. Michelle Curtella here in just a moment. She's the president of the American College of Pediatricians. You can follow them on Twitter at ACPEDS.
If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward, but you also know that it could take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job. And so with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by all the right people. Then ZipRecruiter puts smart matching technology to work. What they do is they go out and they actively notify the qualified candidates about your job within minutes of your posting it. So you're going to receive the best possible matches. You're not just waiting for the people to find you. It's going out and finding them for you. This is why 80% of employers who post ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first 24 hours. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. You can find your next employee on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Dr. Michelle Curtella, president of the American College of Pediatricians, joins us.
She was speaking at the Heritage Foundation. She gave a quite a stirring talk and caused a lot of controversy online. I can't imagine the hell that your life is, quite honestly. Can you tell us first, Michelle, the difference between sex and gender? What's the difference between sex and gender?
Sure. Sex, quite simply, is biologically determined at fertilization by genetics. Any unborn child who has a functioning Y chromosome is going to develop into a male. And if that unborn child is missing a functional Y chromosome, the child develops into a female. There's nothing, now, there's nothing in between. The body declares our sex. It's,
right.
It's there in our body.
Right.
Now, gender has essentially become a political, just a political term.
Right. It, when I was growing up, there was gender and sex was the same.
For the same.
Yes. Okay. All right. Exactly. So I just wanted to make sure that I hadn't missed something along the way that somebody was taking terms and changing them. Okay.
So this is what happened. Prior to the 1950s, gender was not anywhere to be found in the medical literature. But in the 1950s, that's when sexologists like John Money and Harry Benjamin were wanting to justify sex reassignment surgery, so-called. And they needed, they knew they couldn't, that you can't change sex. Surgery and chemicals cannot change sex. They knew this. So they had to invent a term to justify their profiting from this surgery. And so they grabbed onto gender and said, oh, gender for us means the social expression of an internal sexed identity. And that is what is being put forth now without any, I mean, it's made up. There's no such thing as an innate sexed identity.
Here's the real problem. At 7 years old, I mean, you know, in my faith, you choose to be a member of our faith at what we call the age of accountability is 8 years old. However, there's a lot of people that make a choice early on that I'm a Catholic, I'm a Baptist, I'm a atheist, I'm whatever, and they change. No decision that is permanent should be made by a seven-year-old under any circumstance, or quite honestly, there'd be a lot of us that were walking around that were, you know, that wanted at seven to be a kitty cat or Batman.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I try to make, you know, in this debate, we're debating physical reality, the physical reality of sex versus identity. And identity refers to thinking and perceiving, which is in the mind, and that is changeable. Okay. So that's then as far as gender identity, meaning recognizing your own sex, the gender experts, so-called, are correct that most children correctly identify themselves as boys or girls by age 3. But what the experts are not saying is that many children ages 7 and below do not understand that sex is constant and permanent and stable. In other words, some 7-year-olds actually believe if they watch a man put on a dress and makeup, will actually think, oh, he just became a woman. So cognitively speaking, it is a process of development. And that's why it's so damaging to have 3-year-olds being read to by drag queens, and particularly when the drag queens are reading these ridiculous gender-bending picture books to them. It is confusing and will derail the normal psychological and cognitive development of those preschool children.
Well, lifelong decisions should not be made while viewing Peppa Pig, is kind of what you're saying.
Yes. Okay.
Lifelong decisions should not be made by children.
Right.
And even teenagers. I mean, adolescence is full of changeability.
Okay, hold on for just a second. I want to continue our conversation in just a second with Dr. Michelle Cretella. She is the president of American College of Pediatricians. We're going to talk a little bit about what your children are being taught in school and how to talk to them about it coming up.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're spending some time with Dr. Michelle Cretella. She is she's the president of American College of Pediatricians. Just full disclosure, you should know that, what is that group, the Southern Poverty Law Center? you know, deems her group as, you know, hate-filled or whatever it is. So she's not liked, but I could imagine you already know that because of the things that she is saying. She is at a published paper in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons just last year on gender dysphoria in children and suppression of debate. And we wanted to give her some airtime to tell us what your children are facing in school and how do we deal with it.
Sure. From the early elementary levels that I've been sent school curricula to evaluate from concerned parents, I hear from concerned parents and even teachers across America, or particularly over the last couple of years. So preschool to the elementary years, it's primarily introduced by books, anything from picture books to story books, normalizing gender confusion. One that is particularly, I consider particularly dangerous for preschoolers is introducing Teddy. And it's about a teddy bear who starts out with wearing a bow tie, and his name is Teddy. And by the end of the story, he has moved his bow tie to his head as a barrette, and changed his name to a, you know, and has become a girl teddy bear, the children are taught. And again, because of their development, many of these young children will come to believe, oh yes, I can change my sex just by changing my appearance. The other thing that is very disturbing is that biology has been deemed transphobic. As incredible as it may be to believe, I've been handed curricula for biology lessons and health lessons that specifically tell the teachers, do not refer to boys and girls, refer to students, and do not say that girls make eggs and boys make sperm. Refer to people. People with ovaries make eggs and people with testicles make sperm, because we want to be
but again, we're called science deniers if you're on the right, but this is a denial of the X and Y chromosome.
And what is not helpful is that the other side is using true biological disorders known as disorders of sex development. And these are people who have genuine genetic disorders and therefore are oftentimes infertile because they don't have, they may have been born with a non-functioning Y chromosome, for example. They're extremely rare, but the body declares these extremely rare disorders. They are not part of the transgender phenomenon. They are separate and distinct. But the transgender activists have unjustly pulled them into their cause. We know these are disorders of sex development precisely because the norm is to have male and female to continue the species, right? That's basic biology 101.
Have you heard about the doctors up? I read about them in Vancouver, Canada, that are now dealing with handicap dysphoria, where people are coming in and saying, I was born handicapped. I was born with only one arm, and they are asking the doctors to remove an arm.
Yes, and this is actually not new. There's a name for it. It's called body identity integrity disorder, and one of the more common, I mean, it's rare, but one of the more common predisposing events is for soldiers who've come back from war and witnessed their friends dying. So they have post-traumatic stress, they have survivor guilt, and they come back from war convinced that they are actually amputees themselves, trapped in a normal body, and they will ask to have their legs removed. And so there's no one.
So wait, so what is the difference? What what do doctors on the other side say is the difference between that and I need to have my breast removed?
Oh, well, when you want a healthy body part other than your breast or your penis removed, that's a mental disorder. Oh, that's a conversion disorder. That's post-traumatic stress. The bottom line is, when you are talking psychology or psychiatry, the diagnosis is made by listening to the person's words and thoughts, and you have to ask yourself, does this match reality or not? That's the bottom line. There's no blood test. There's no genetic test. It's we are contrasting the person's thoughts and perceptions and feelings against reality. And that's ultimately what mental health, the field of mental health and medicine does in every case except sex.
So
when
it
comes to your sex organs, all of a sudden, ooh, it's different.
Do you believe this is going to get much worse before we return to sanity?
I have hope that we will return to sanity. It's going to be very difficult, but the reason I have hope is because I am hearing from physicians, therapists on the left, and they're thanking me for speaking out. I have far more people thanking me than coming after me with ad hominem attacks.
Hmm.
I have some members of the transgender community thanking me because they are deeply concerned about what is happening to innocent children. Radical feminists, lesbians, and gay men have not been speaking out as much on this as the radical feminists and some lesbians, but they are there in the background, and essentially they're saying, you know, what the experts are not bringing out is that when you do support gender-confused children through natural puberty, not only do the vast majority identify with their biological sex, but a large percentage also identify as gay adults. So from within the LGB communities, many of them look at this as, this is eugenics. You're sterilizing children.
Yes.
You see what I mean? Who are they?
Yes. I do.
They see it as a tremendous homophobic movement. So there are many layers to this that cross political boundaries.
Okay.
And that's why I have, and like you said earlier, it's so clearly anti-science. It's contrary to biology and physical reality. I mean, if we lose on this, holy cow, forget about it.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Yeah. Michelle Cretella. Thank you.
Website is factsaboutyouth.com, the American College of Pediatrics, and Dr. Michelle Cretella, who is more optimistic than many on the victory in that particular battle.
I will tell you, though, that I hear the same thing. I hear the same thing from people on the left. They say it quietly, but they are saying it, and that is, I'm beginning to be more afraid of my own side than yours. My side has given in to the crazies, and they're going over the edge. You probably will regret not saying that out loud, just as so many are regretting now not saying anything about Harvey Weinstein. We all hear the stories in the news. Good guy uses a gun to protect his family from criminals, and he's the one who gets arrested. Thanks to our court system, that happens a lot, and what can happen to you unless you're fully prepared. Now, I want you to get a concealed carry permit, but I also want you to join the USCCA. Gave a story this morning out of San Diego of a woman who had a concealed carry permit. She had a gun in her car. How does she do that in California? I mean, that's a remarkable thing just in and of itself.
Yeah, not easy.
But she had a gun underneath the car seat, and a guy kidnaps her, just opens up her car door, gets in, puts a gun, puts a knife to her throat, says drive, takes her to a wooded area. She is still driving, so she stops the car, and she knows her gun is underneath the seat. And she takes it, and she now has, a gun at a knife fight. He's been arrested. She was unharmed. I'd like to see what happened to her as the police arrived in California and she defended herself with a gun. You need protection. And the USCCA does just that. I want you to go right now to protectanddefend.com, protectanddefend.com. Find out all the different ways that they can educate you and your family how to stay safe, but also how they can protect you, God forbid, if you ever need to use a gun. Protectanddefend.com, protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We're just counting the number of Peppa Pig references that Stu has to make in every broadcast.
I'm contractually obligated, obviously, to at least mention Peppa once, but this is the second of the day.
No, this would be the third.
Well, I had one yesterday, so it's three in the last 2 days now.
I'd like to go back to the transcripts because I believe this would be the third time.
Really?
Yes, I believe it was the third time.
Look, it is my favorite kids show.
Probably the fifth time off air.
Do I like Blaze and the Monster Machines? Sure, I do.
Sure.
And maybe that would make more sense, being that we're on the Blaze convention.
Sure.
Peppa Pig, Mama Pig, mm-hmm. Daddy Pig, George, mm-hmm. Zoe Zebra. There's a lot of great characters mm-hmm. on there. Mm-hmm. So I do like to hit the Peppa Pig every once in a while.
Okay.
But again, this is not necessarily the time,
right,
for my children to be making life-altering decisions that are permanent. For example, even something fundamental as belief in God can theoretically be reversed if they wish later on in life. I hope that doesn't happen. And it's one of the most important things, probably the most important thing we're trying to teach our children about. But if one of my kids decides later on he wants to reverse that will be reversible for them. The idea that while my kid is begging me to watch Peppa Pig or Blaze and the Monster Machines, I don't think...
I'm trying to think of any decision that should be made by a kid that lasts more than a normal kid decision.
Even short-term decisions, they want to eat jelly beans for breakfast.
Yes.
Right?
There's nothing.
They want to eat paste half the time, which is not as bad as people say, but...
Ooh, your kids want to eat paste?
No, they don't.
I was gonna say, because there's something wrong with them.
Probably true. It's not. It's ill-advised,
yes.
I would say.
Yes.
But, my daughter Ainsley, she likes to cut things out of the paper. You know what else she likes to do? She likes to cut her hair while she's
right.
at it.
Right.
Is that a good decision? No, but the hair grows back.
Right.
You don't want to make permanent decisions when you're entertained by, maybe a family of small pigs that live on a large hill.
Right.
And occasionally sing songs about balloons.
You would say that adults have,
Look, I'm also entertained by Peppa Pig, so I'm not making my point very well. But yes, I think adults have more perspective, maybe a more ability to make decisions like that.
So have you heard of Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera?
I have not.
All right. She's a congressional candidate from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
She's running for Congress, and she said that three blonde, big-bodied beings, two females,
okay.
one male,
mm-hmm.
visited her when she was seven.
Okay, see?
Okay, and communicated telepathically to her several times in her life. Rodriguez Aguilera, 59, a Republican who is running to replace the retiring Republican, recounted her experience with extraterrestrials during a 2009 interview. She said she went up inside the spaceship. I went in and there were some round seats that were there and some quartz rocks that controlled the ship. It wasn't like an airplane.
Quartz rocks controlled the ship?
Come on, man.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Does it outline the emissions?
She
wasn't
said it
polluting
wasn't like an
the
airplane.
Earth. Was
she said it wasn't like an airplane, okay?
Well, I mean, I did gather that, but I mean it,
try
I hope
to act
it was
like an adult for a second.
I hope it was carbon neutral. That's all.
She said she found several things out from the aliens. One, there are 30,000 skulls different from humans in a cave in the Mediterranean island of Malta.
Yeah, well,
we should go look for that.
I mean, she should go look for it if she's running for Congress.
Right.
I mean,
that knows where they are. 30,000 non-human skulls.
Introduce a bill, perhaps?
She said the world's energy center is in Africa.
Okay. All right.
She says the Coral Castle, which is a limestone tourist attraction in South Miami-Dade, is actually an ancient Egyptian pyramid in Miami.
How long have we been talking about that? I mean, up to seconds.
She also said that aliens mentioned to her ISIS. Now, she didn't clarify whether she meant the terrorist organization or the ancient Egyptian goddess, but she did hear talk about ISIS.
Well, if it was 2009, it would have to be the goddess, right?
Or they were telling her what was coming.
Oh, okay.
So it was, what did she know, and when did she know it? That's kind of the question.
She should have warned us back then.
So this, the reason why I'm sharing this is because I just want to show you that even some adults should not be trusted to make their own decisions. Like, I want to run for Congress, or better yet, I think I know who I want to vote for Congress.
Or, I'm going to take that interview request. That sounds like a good idea for my future.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Glenn Beck. Love.
It's amazing.
Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
All right, we have a choice. We could talk about the latest with Colin Kaepernick and his lawsuit against the NFL, or we could talk about a very different story with the NFL, a story that I think is much more important, one that probably is not going to gain an awful lot of coverage. While the national anthem protests continue to dominate the headlines and create division, one NFL team is quietly taking a different path. Oh, I hate to say this because Stu is such a fan of the Eagles, but the night before the Philadelphia Eagles game in Charlotte, several players gathered at the hotel's indoor swimming pool. They held hands, they prayed, while one of their teammates, wide receiver Marcus Johnson, was baptized by a fellow player in the pool. Now, apparently, this is becoming the new norm for the Eagles. A year ago, five other Eagle players were baptized in the recovery pool at the team's practice facility. Several players on the team are outspoken about their Christian faith. They say they have found strength and encouragement from fellow believers on the team. More and more now in the Eagles, teammates are attending weekly Bible studies at players' homes and prayer sessions night before the games. The quarterback, Carson Wentz, openly discusses his faith. Some players have said they're not interested, yet no one on the team is excluded or pressured. Colin Kaepernick seems to be allowing the anthem protest to define the narrative of his life. The anger that he felt about racial injustice that fueled his protest to begin with is now boiling over into more anger and more blame. However, maybe we should take note of the several Philadelphia Eagles players that are more interested in the message that you don't have to let your past, your mistakes, your bitterness, what you've done, what others have done to you, define your life, your story, and your narrative. The Eagles seem to be doing something refreshing during this divisive NFL season. They have a different kind of bond and a different kind of peace that will serve them well beyond the football field. It is the bond of faith that teaches radical love and forgiveness, the only things that can truly reach across the racial and political divide. Faith, truth, love, forgiveness. Protests have their place, but they don't have the power to heal a nation.
Tuesday, October 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
No matter what they do, God is not going to allow the Eagles to win. It's just, I want you to know that. They will choke in the end. Even I know this.
Just once before I die, Glenn, is all I ask.
Yeah, well.
Really, it's all I ask about my life, my time on this planet. Is to see this happen one time. Just one time before
I die. If it happens
die.
This year, can you die?
Yeah, pretty. I could die happy. Right, I don't know if I should die. It's probably not the best thing.
Right.
Maybe for the family. I don't know. Maybe it is.
All right.
Look, at least I can
you're
die
at that
happy.
Point?
Yeah,
you're at that point.
Know.
You're like, I'm not sure.
I have no idea if I'm
I could be screwing the kids up. I might be doing great service. I don't know. I have no idea.
It is an amazing story, though, because I obviously am a huge fan of the 5-1 Philadelphia Eagles. However, what's going on with Carson Wentz is really interesting, and the team as a whole. Wentz is this, you know, their star quarterback. He's in his second year. And it's interesting to see the difference between him and, you know, for example, Tim Tebow, who was, I mean, became a media firestorm around him with everything. And people were saying he shouldn't be praying on the field and all of these things. The same thing with Carson Wentz. I mean, he is really out there talking about this stuff really regularly. You look at his social media feeds. It's as much Bible verse as it is football talk. And he doesn't seem to be getting any of that criticism, which obviously is the right thing, right? I mean, that you should be getting criticism because of your faith. But he talks about it. He says, I always tell people, for example, if you love your job, you love your wife, you love what you do, you're going to talk about it. Well, I love Jesus. That's what I love. So I'm going to talk about it.
So what is the difference?
But I'm not going to force it down your throat.
What's
either.
The difference between him and Tebow? Why is this so under the radar where Tebow was, I mean, he was crucified.
Yeah. And, you know, Tebow, I think, you know, Wentz is a much higher profile player as far as his abilities are. You know, like Tebow was, you know, very high profile in college, but was never a great NFL quarterback. I mean, Carson Wentz is looking at, you know, he's in the conversation for MVP this year so far. So it's, I don't know if it's partially because Tebow was also a divisive player and that a lot of people hated him. A lot of people loved him as a player. So they maybe they took that and pushed it over into the religious, sort of sphere, where Wentz is, you know, pretty much so far universally adored. I mean, these things can change at any time. Tiger Woods was once universally adored. But I mean, you know, he's pretty much universally adored right now. So if he starts sucking really badly, maybe people will start bringing this up more often. I don't know.
Have you ever heard this happen in where players are being baptized in a pool?
I had never heard of it before. And this is not the first time, apparently. I mean, they are, you know.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And they're sharing pictures of it on social media. Johnson's short, that's where that picture came from. If you haven't seen it, I think it was on The Blaze. I know it was on Faith Wire, a couple of other sites that had the actual picture of them, you know, 15 people around it. I think it was like 6 or 7 players, a bunch of coaches, as a guy's getting baptized in the pool before a game in a hotel. I mean, it's
that's nuts.
It's cool, though.
It's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah. It's just crazy
in this
flashback.
World, yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, that just, you don't see that. And you don't see that with celebrities, and you don't see that with sports figures. You just, you know, you'll hear people, I want to thank Harvey Weinstein and God.
Yeah, because I mean, they did an analysis of the Oscar speeches, and legitimately Harvey Weinstein was thanked more than God in the speeches.
Well, I believe that.
It's incredible, though. I mean, you look at this. I mean, Wentz is talking about how he's going to share this stuff more publicly. And he has this whole charity, which is Audience of One, it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's about, he went to Haiti and did a sermon in Haiti to people there. And he's like, wait a minute, if I can fly across the world or, you know, a long flight to Haiti and do a sermon there, why am I not doing this here with people that I know? And so it's a really cool thing. And at the other side, you have the Colin Kaepernick thing. He's suing the NFL. And, you know, I realized this yesterday. People forget that Colin Kaepernick, he was the first one to do this in the NFL. However, he wasn't the only one who did it on his own team. Even that first week, Eric Reed is another player who was on the 49ers and knelt next to him. And all the pictures, every picture of Kaepernick from that time shows him kneeling next to Eric Reed. Eric Reed was also on the field. Eric Reed was also kneeling right next to Colin Kaepernick. Eric Reed was protesting the same way, at the same time, with the same skin color. Yet Eric Reed is still on the San Francisco 49ers because he is an average player. He's not even a good player. He's an average player.
What are you saying there?
Colin Kaepernick sucks.
All right, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure. Earlier today, I read something from Facebook from a Hollywood writer that said, "Shame on all of us. We all knew." That was the name of it. Everyone effing knew. And he said, "I hang my head in shame today because I didn't say anything. And it's because Harvey treated me well, but I knew it." He said, "I didn't know about the rapes or any of that." He said, "But I knew the guy was a disgusting pig. But we never said anything about it." And he said, "Nobody did, but we all knew. So let's stop this pretense that we didn't know." I found something that is going around that is also viral. This is from Joe Biden. And here's Joe Biden giving a speech at an anti-violence organization. And he's using teleprompter. And at first it feels pretty legitimate, and you're like, wow, he's got a lot of fire on this. And then you start watching his eyes and you realize he's reading a teleprompter. And I want you to hear this. Maybe he really does mean this, but let's have a discussion about Joe Biden after you hear what he said about Weinstein.
It takes courage to speak out. With these women in Hollywood speaking out now, did it to save other women from similar abuse. This disgusting behavior, at least on the part of Harvey Weinstein, has been brought to an abrupt and justifiable end. But it's long past time for the powerful men in Hollywood to speak up, to be strong enough to say something, because silence is complicity.
Now, Joe, aren't you the one that we have video of all the time saying, "Why don't you come on over here? Give me a little hug. Give me a little sugar." I mean,
pulling women onto his lap.
Right. Being close, wildly kissing. Inappropriate.
Yes. Very awkward. People seem to be put off by good old Joe pretty often.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how that one's going to work. And he gave such a passionate speech there that I wonder if there is anything about Joe Biden, because we've heard the rumors before. And if there is anything, I'm wondering if anyone has the courage to say, "You unbelievable hypocrite." Because it was quite a message of, when men have power, they should never wield it over a younger woman and make her feel uncomfortable.
I mean, not only is Biden, historically, eternally creepy with people as he interacts with them. I mean, he also was a huge, obviously, supporter of Bill Clinton, of Ted Kennedy, of all sorts of, sordid characters over the years. And not to mention took tons of cash, right? I mean, from people like Weinstein. I mean, Weinstein, the report I saw today was that he actually donated to the Clinton Legal Defense Fund back in the day for the sexual harassment litigation that was going on against Bill. This is something that has been, there, it's been present within this party, and I mean, it's in all society, but you can't sit here and act like, you're standing up for women when they've acted the way they have. I mean, all they can do is confess.
There are Democrats now that are starting to come out against the Clintons. Can you please play the cut? Democrat rips Clintons for keeping Harvey money.
I worked for Bill Clinton. I'm still fond of Bill Clinton and certainly have been supportive of the goals of the foundation. But this is dumb. This is just dumb. Give the money back. Weinstein is totally discredited, as he should be. This isn't an issue of politics. The man's a predator. You took money from him. Give it back, period.
I don't know if, I mean, if they try to play this game of, we had no idea. I have a feeling there is a new sense of righteousness of people coming out and saying, you know what, I'm going to be completely transparent. Yeah, I did know, and I knew nothing, and I didn't say anything about it. I didn't know about the rape, but I did know. I mean, I don't know what I would have done, but I did know. There's no way. The Secret Service, as they're sending the president's daughter to Harvey Weinstein, nobody on the Secret Service said, hey, we want you to know there are threats of predator behavior. That's the Secret Service's job. They didn't get any kind of briefing? Come on.
That's weird. That's the first time
of course.
I've never heard anybody bring that up.
Of course.
But I mean, how do they miss that? If everyone in Hollywood knows, how can they possibly allow Malia to go work for this guy? I mean, that is that's a real oversight there.
Because mom and dad knew that he was really, really powerful, and mom and dad knew he's not going to do anything with my daughter.
I mean, it's probably true, right? I mean, I'm sure Harvey Weinstein wouldn't think he could get away with that. But still, I mean, it's not something I would risk as a dad. I don't care how powerful I am. You risk that?
No.
I wouldn't?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Not at all.
If you travel for business, you know that it's a game of win and losses, and opening the overhead bin and finding room for your carry-on, I mean, that's a win. Uh-huh. That's like, holy cow, look at that.
It's a huge win, one I never get, it seems like.
You're staying in a hotel. You don't get your wake-up call. Big loss. Buying your next business trip with Upside.com, huge win. Upside has the absolute best available prices for flights, hotel, and rental cars. And the way they do this is they bundle everything up together. Upside is going to reward you with a gift card for places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. They want your company to book all of their travel through Upside. And so they have really made it worth it for the company. They will give you selections. You say, hey, I want to leave New York and fly to Dallas on Tuesday at this time. They'll find the flight, and then it'll say, do you want to leave an hour earlier or an hour later? And I can save you X number of dollars if you bundle your hotel. If you stay a block further from there or a little closer, you can also save money. And every time you save money, your gift card from Amazon goes up. So your company wins, the hotels win, the airfare, the airlines win, and you win personally because you get this gift card from Amazon. Guaranteed, I think it's $100 for your first trip on Upside.com. So book it now. Go book your travel now at Upside.com. Upside.com. Use the promo code Beck. You will get that minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. Upside.com. You deserve a better business trip. Minimum purchase is required. See site for complete details. It's Upside.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Those of us at the Glenn Beck program, Mercury Studios and The Blaze, would ask that you would pray for Dana Lash and her family. They have had to move out of their home and move to a new place because of security threats. And we ask for the veil of protection over her and her family. The security threats are numerous and relentless from the left on her because she represents the National Rifle Association. And they have now come after her children as well. So please say a prayer for Dana Lash, and she will be hopefully in the on the air today at 6 o'clock on her usual time at theblaze.com. Canadian man who was recently freed after being held in Afghanistan by Taliban-tied kidnappers. He was held for 5 years. He said that when his captors came in to talk to him, he thought that they were trying to screw with his mind. Maybe it was a joke, but he couldn't figure out why they would tell him such crazy things. He had been
in captivity and held by them for 5 years. They at one point came in and said, Donald Trump is president. And he didn't believe it. He thought that stuff. What is the game they're playing? Can you imagine? Why would they tell me that? What do they want me to believe? Who really is the president? Because it's not Donald Trump. Who do they want me? Why would they tell me that? What information are they? I don't know who won the season in The Apprentice. I don't know.
He didn't realize it until he was actually freed.
Yeah, until he was freed. And he was like, holy cow, really? Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, also, world. Another story comes out about Carrie Fisher. Heather Ross, who works in the film industry, told Carrie Fisher about how an unnamed producer sexually assaulted her in his car. She reacted. She stopped and got a box from Tiffany, one of those little blue boxes with the white bow on it. Then she went to the grocery store and then she wrapped it in a little blue box and delivered it to his house. He apparently had forced himself on her in a car, making an excuse to pull over, then reached over and climbed on top of her. He said, you'll never make a movie in my town. When she said, I don't want you to do this. And he said, get the F out of my car, kicked her out. 2 weeks later, Carrie went to his office and personally delivered a Tiffany box wrapped in the white bow with a cow tongue in it. She said, if you ever touch my darling Heather or any other woman again, the next delivery will be something of yours in a much smaller box. We miss Carrie Fisher.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat is here. He joins us. His show Unleashed is immediately follows this program on the Blaze Radio Network. You can find that at theblaze.com or glennbeck.com. And Pat is here, is dressed up as, I think, a sexy hot nurse for Halloween. I'm not really sure. But
you would probably believe that, but no, this is just my natural...
Really?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I can't help myself.
The cleavage is...
Right?
Impressive. It's low and plunging. It is. It's anyway.
I'm worried in this Weinstein era that we should be talking like that about Pat.
That's for sure.
You're right. Gonna, sorry, Pat. I didn't mean
flashbacks.
To. Yeah, I didn't mean to.
Man, oh man.
Oof.
Have you guys been boning up on your cultural appropriation rules for Halloween?
No, I have not. No,
because university students are all over the country. Mm-hmm. You know, gone are the days when college students can dress up without fear of being reported to a bias response team. A bias response team. Now, when they respond, I guess it's all like SWAT, and they break into your party and start shooting.
Do they have the siren? Do they have the sirens that go? Wee.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. They're
so
very
you can tell
European.
Them a difference between the police and the European police.
Yes. Unacceptable costumes listed on a University of St. Thomas diversity flyer are, quote, wearing Native American headdresses, dressing up as a Mexican by wearing a sombrero, dressing as a geisha, or any form of blackface, obviously. Cultural appropriation is defined as the act of taking intellectual and cultural expressions from a culture that's not your own. It's not okay.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Say that again. I'm just getting ready for St. Patrick's Day, so I just want to make sure.
How dare you?
Wear green?
No. Cultural appropriation is defined as the act of taking intellectual and cultural expressions from a culture that is not your own.
So I can't go. I can go to a beer fest, but you guys can't.
Right. This would really limit a lot of restaurants' ability to sell their products.
It would be the cure for alcoholism the rest of the year, though, because if you're appropriating Irish culture by drinking yourself into a coma, Irish already have that down. That's part of their culture.
And you can say that because you're Irish.
And I can say that because I'm Irish.
But quickly,
thank goodness somebody said it.
Yes, it had to be said.
If Halloween, if I remember correctly, is a holiday in which you dress up as something you are not, right? That's the fundamental principle.
No, that's, I mean, that's
of
ancient
the holiday
thinking.
Okay,
no,
so anything you would dress up as by definition, would be something you are not, whether it's a football player or
are
a superhero
saying,
or a vampire. It's always
going to
be.
Can you hear the hate in this? Can, do you hear the hate dripping out of him?
The point is, it's an appropriation-based holiday.
You're like a fountain of hate.
If that was true, then the only person that would be allowed to dress as a witch would be. I don't think I can finish that joke.
You cannot. No, you definitely should not.
A guide put out by Northern Arizona's University Housing and Residence Life warns against African-inspired get-ups, a Pocahontas costume, Asian rice hats, and more.
Wait, what's an Asian rice hat?
I have no idea.
Is it made out of rice?
I don't know.
Does it shield you from rice? What is it?
Don't know.
Okay. I wish I hadn't. Could you look that up, please? I would like a picture of an Asian rice hat. I may have one.
Members of the University of Utah's Student Affairs Diversity Council state, as you get ready for Halloween, here are some tips you can put into practice. Think to yourself, does the actual name on the costume packaging say tribal or traditional? Does the costume include race-related hair or accessories like dreadlocks, afros, cornrows, or a headdress? Does the costume play into racial stereotypes? If you answered yes to any of these questions, rethink your costume and try again.
So I couldn't go as Dracula because the Transylvanians, which...
They'll be pissed.
They will be pissed.
And they will be hurt and they will be offended.
Correct. You can't dress as a witch because there are real witches. And
Wiccans will be dramatically offended.
You can't dress up as dead people because you're not dead.
This is kind of my thing, though, to all of these rulemaking university students. I say ask yourself two questions. One, who died and made you cultural czar of Halloween? And two, is this still America? If the answer to these questions is no one and yes, shove these rules up your rectal cavity and shut your pie holes.
But I really like to have a discussion about that, Pat. Maybe you wouldn't be the one to discuss it.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
maybe not. Uh-huh.
I don't think there's any discussing to be had.
I don't think so. I think it was pretty clear.
Plenty more discussion on this coming up on Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and Television Networks. You can check it out at theblaze.com.
All righty. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It's Mercury Real Estate. You want your home sold on time and for the most money without any kind of excuse? Well, then what you need is realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com is a group of hand-selected real estate agents that have the same values that, you know, we try to have. If you're listening to this program, we're on the program. You know, we talk about certain principles and ethics and the way we want to be treated and the way we want to treat others. The people that are these real estate agents, the first thing is that they're all listeners to the show. So they're all fans of the show. And then we look at their track record and we look at what they are as a real estate agent, what their track record is, how their sales go, what their customer service policies are like. They're all fully vetted and handpicked by my team for their knowledge, their skill, their track record. So when you need to sell your house or buy a house, you can go to realestateagentsitrust.com and you can put in your zip code and your information and they will immediately contact you and line you up with a real estate agent or maybe even a couple. And then you can decide which one. But these are the people that will actually get your home sold on time and for the most amount of money. Really good people that will take the stress out of home buying and home selling. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So let's take some audio clips that are unrelated and see if we can make sense of them. Here is Bibi Netanyahu on the focus of the media.
I think that how a country treats religious minorities is a very good indicator of how it will treat its other citizens and its neighbors. So today I have a simple request for the media outlets in this room. Dedicate this week to highlighting the plight of the countless Christians suffering under Iran. Profile the brave Christian leaders jailed for practicing their faith. Sit with the families of the school teachers jailed for years merely for converting to Christianity. Call out the lie and the lies of President Rouhani, who promised in 2013 that all religions would, quote, feel justice in Iran while so many Christians live there in constant terror.
This is something that we're going to be getting into shortly. We're trying to see how things settle down. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to go in the right way. You're going to see in the news in the next few weeks that ISIS is over, that Raqqa was the last real stronghold of ISIS. Well, what they're not telling you is that Iran is plowing over all of it. Iran and the Iraqi army have joined forces, and they are now going up to the Kurds, and there are reports now that the Peshmerga being beheaded by the Iranian soldiers. We have, in effect, I believe, given the Middle East over to Iran. And they are going to be on the doorstep of Benjamin Netanyahu in a short period of time. But I find it remarkable that it takes a Jewish leader to stand up and say, can someone please cover the plight of the Christians in the Middle East? Here's Lady Gaga on our government.
So when you say something happened to you that, oh, we'll let the government decide if it happened or not. I don't want to live in a country like that. I mean, I want to be somewhere where when a child says I was raped, that every adult in the room says, are you okay? What happened? Who was it? We want to help you.
What were you wearing?
What were you doing? And did you do anything wrong? And were you on drugs? And were you drinking? And
I don't even understand this. First of all, what do you mean you don't want the government to decide? You mean you don't want a jury to decide?
You don't want the legal system?
I mean, that's a really scary place to where if somebody can just make an accusation, we all bow down to it. I mean, have you ever read The Crucible? that's what that's about.
And it's not the two things she wants are not mutually exclusive. The government can decide legal matters as well as we can all say, what happened? Oh, are you okay? Can we help?
That's not really the government. That's a jury of your peers. I don't want the government to decide that either. I do want a jury of my peers.
Yes, it's within the government system, yes. Legal system, which, I mean, has a structure and is one of the few things that's actually supposed to be a government power, at least at some level. But you're right. It's still a jury of your peers and that makes the final decision.
Hasn't she been arguing for the government to decide who can get married and who can't?
Yeah, absolutely. Who should be paying for birth control and all of that is all government business. But this is a weird thing we're at right now, which is it goes back to the Hillary Clinton. Every woman should be believed when she makes an accusation, except for obviously the women who are accusing her husband. You should be able to be taken seriously. You should not be dismissed if you make a claim. But are we in that place? I mean, I don't know. Certainly right now, it seems like that is what everyone's saying on online, and everyone's saying they've all been through these things and no one believes them. And I mean, I hope that's not true.
You know, Gretchen Carlson has her book out this week, Fierce. Mm. And she's the one who first really started this ball rolling. I mean, if it wasn't
Roger Ailes.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for her on Roger Ailes, I don't think any of this stuff would have been when going. But she's got a new book out. I'd like to talk to her this week.
Yeah.
And see what she says. How do we find that place where a woman has a right not to be believed, but has a right to be taken seriously? And is there a difference?
I can't imagine Gretchen Carlson thinks that every woman who makes an accusation automatically is believed. It's a ridiculous standard. It's not an American standard.
No.
You know, the
no.
only place that standard exists is for guys in, like, Iran Right. Like, you know, if there's some
that's the standard.
The guy just gets believed and the woman is guilty.
It takes three witnesses of women. It takes three women witnesses to dispute the accused or one guy. So if one guy says he didn't do it, he was with me. Three women have to say I witnessed it firsthand for it to be believed. Let's go to some more unbelievable. Here is Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell yesterday. Same agenda.
We are probably now,
is to win elections in November. My goal is the leader of the Republican Party in the Senate is to keep us in the majority. The way you do that is not complicated. Gold. You have to nominate people who can actually win because winners make policy and losers go home. We changed the business model in 2014. We nominated people who could win everywhere. We took the majority in the Senate. We had one skirmish in 2016. We kept the majority in the Senate. So our operating approach will be to support our incumbents and in open seats to seek to help nominate people who can actually win in November. That's my approach. That's the way you keep a governing majority.
For what point?
Yeah,
to do what?
Who cares if you have a majority if you do nothing with it all the time?
Give me the Trump cut, please. Do you have it, Sarah? Trump McConnell, same agenda in the press conference. It's for MBH.
We are probably now, despite what we read, we're probably now, I think, at least as far as I'm concerned, closer than ever before. And the relationship is very good. We're fighting for the same thing. We're fighting for lower taxes, big tax cuts, the biggest tax cuts in the history of our nation. My relationship with this gentleman is outstanding, has been outstanding.
I want to underscore what the president said. We have the same agenda.
It's just laughable. I mean, nobody, including those two, believe that. I mean, they've been, you know, at each other's throats the entire time. And then they just go out. I mean, it's just, it's politics, though, right? They're trying to convince people that these things can happen. And McConnell went on when he was talking about the Senate races. He was like,
well, you know, Christine O'Donnell's not in the Senate. You know, and neither is Todd Akin.
And it's like, and his point is like, don't nominate these people who are, you know, I guess his point was don't nominate people who can't win that are too conservative or whatever. Of course, he leaves out that Mike Lee's in the Senate and Rand Paul's in the Senate. And
Ted Cruz is
in the Senate and Ben Sasse is in the Senate and Pat Toomey's in the Senate and. You know, Marco Rubio is in the Senate. All these people came into that idea that remember, Marco Rubio ran against Charlie Crist, and the establishment wanted Charlie Crist to win. I mean, you know, you might not think Rubio's the perfect conservative now, but I mean, think of the difference. Crist then went on to go as an independent and then a Democrat. I mean, this guy stood up against all of the good senators that are in the Senate. And tried to stop them. And now they're incumbents. He's going to support them. Well, if they suck, you should support the other one. I'm no fan of Steve Bannon. I'm no fan of Breitbart. I'm not going to love the candidates that he tries to primary some of these people with. But that is what primaries are for. Stop acting like it's your birthright to be in the Senate for your entire life. If somebody is going to do a job that is better than you and the people want it, it's not some inconvenience that they primary you. It's what the system is. They're supposed to do it, and I'm glad they do.
Beyond that, it's not just if they will do a better job. Is will they do their job?
Mm-hmm.
Period. Mm-hmm. Will they do it?
Glenn Beck.